Radio Prague News. The former head of the office of ex-Prime Minister Petr Nečas has been cleared of charges of abuse of office. The Czech finance minister has won support from the European Commission for his reverse charge VAT proposal, and Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka sent British Prime Minister David Cameron a message of support and condolences over the murder of Labour MP Joe Cox. Prague District Court has once again cleared the former head of office of ex-Prime Minister Petr Nečas, Jana Nagyová, now Nečasová, of abusing her position by ordering the military intelligence to spy on Mr. Nečas's then-wife, Radka. The court dealt with the case again following an appeal by the state attorney. As in the previous ruling, the judge accepted the ex-Prime Minister's assertion that the intelligence service had merely protected his wife from being followed. Three former high-ranking intelligence chiefs also charged in the case were also cleared. The state attorney has appealed the verdict once again, and the case will again go back to the municipal court. Jana Nečasová, formerly Nagyová, was romantically linked to the prime minister and later became his wife. The case exploded on the political scene in June 2013, bringing down the centre-right government of Petr Nečas. Meanwhile, several right-wing politicians, among them Civic Democrat Marek Benda and Stan party leader Petr Gazdík, have called on Olomouc state attorney Ivo Ištván, who supervised the case which brought down the Nečas government, to resign. Gazdík said none of the far-reaching accusations made had been proven in court, and the state attorneys on the case should be held accountable. Czech Minister of Finance Andrej Babiš said after a meeting of EU finance ministers in Brussels on Friday that the European Commission had taken a positive stand to his proposal for clamping down on VAT fraud. Babiš said the EC had promised to present a draft legislation on reverse charge VAT by the end of the year. The Czech finance minister has sought the go-ahead from fellow ministers for the Czech Republic to have the widest possible remit of to use so-called reverse charge VAT, where the tax is paid by the consumer, not the seller. He believes the greater use of reverse charge could save the EU a large part of the around 170 billion euros lost every year in unpaid VAT. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek on Friday presented 16 laureates with the Gratias Agit Award for promoting the good name of the Czech Republic abroad. Among those awarded this year, a former gymnast and legendary athlete Věra Čáslavská, Czech-American writer and illustrator Petr Sís, and ballet dancers Jiří and Otto Bubeníček. The awards are held annually in the Great Hall of Černín Palace, the headquarters of the Czech Foreign Ministry. Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has sent British Prime Minister David Cameron a message of support and condolences over the murder of Labour MP Joe Cox on Thursday. Prime Minister Sobotka said he had been deeply shaken by the news, which had come as a shock to the entire democratic world. Our thoughts are with her family and children, the Czech Prime Minister wrote. On an official visit to China, Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka on Friday met with his Chinese counterpart Li Keqiang. The talk centred on boosting cooperation in air transport, healthcare and the financial sector. The Czech Prime Minister also opened a 16-plus-1 summit of Central and East European countries in China. The 16-plus-1 talks are accompanied by a trade fair where the Czech Republic has the biggest representation. Among the companies exhibiting are Škoda Auto, the Lobkowicz Brewery, Alpine Pro and Becherovka. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The weekend should be partly cloudy with scattered showers and daytime highs reaching 24 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, Czech scientists think that they've taken a significant step in targeting the Zika virus. We'll have all the details in just a moment. And one group has launched an initiative to combat food waste. Also in the program, a little later, we'll be talking to the London Czech Center's Renata Clark about a project focusing on the industrial and cultural heritage of Ostrava. Czech scientists believe they have taken a significant step in coming up with possible treatments for both tick-borne encephalitis and its near relation, the Zika virus, which has already been declared a global public health threat by the World Health Organization, that after the infection took off in Latin America at the end of last year. Chris Johnston has been following the story.
The Zika virus hit worldwide headlines after dozens of cases started being reported in Brazil and then across Latin America last year. The mainly mosquito-borne infection damages the fetuses of pregnant women, resulting in massive brain damage, deformation, and often death. The disease has cast a shadow over the upcoming Olympics in Rio, with the most effective action so far being against the mosquitoes that carry the disease. There is no cure. But Czech scientists from the Biological Centre of the Czech Academy of Sciences based in České Budějovice, the Brno-based Institute of Veterinary Medicine and the Institute of Organic Chemistry and Biochemistry in Prague believe they've come up with promising research results which could pave the way for treatments for encephalitis and Zika. Daniel Ruzek is the laboratory head for RBO-Virology at the Institute of Parasitology of the Academy of Science. He told Czech Radio how far the research had advanced so far.
We have currently ascertained what group of chemicals is effective against this virus and what is, let's say, the Achilles heel of the virus, which we can try and deal with. At this moment, we have results from cell cultures, but as well as that, we also have the first results from tests on laboratory mice. Those tests confirmed that the chemicals can protect against deadly neurological infections. As I said, these are the first results, and it will be a long road to some kind of treatment.
Actually, it was largely by chance that the Czech researchers were on the track of substances that could be used to tackle the Zika virus. Daniel Ruzek again.
Our research actually began on tick-borne encephalitis. That resulted in our being able to discover the first substances. Then the Zika virus exploded, which is very closely related to tick-borne encephalitis. On the basis of that, we reckon that the combination of substances that are effective against tick-borne encephalitis virus would also work against the Zika virus, and that has been confirmed.
And the long haul from lab test to an effective drug that can be used on patients might be shortened in this particular case.
Usually it takes up to 15 years from the first stem cell test results or experiments on laboratory animals till the time that a drug comes onto the market. In this specific case, the situation might be a bit easier insofar as that some of these substances that have been identified are already undergoing clinical tests. They have already been identified as effective against the hepatitis C virus, and since the clinical tests for hepatitis are proceeding, it's not so distant that they could be used against other infections. And that was Daniel Ruzek of the Institute of Parasitology of the Academy of Sciences, ending that report by Chris Johnstone. Now we turn to this story. According to reports, around 88 million tons of food are wasted annually in the European Union, an amazing amount. Now one Czech initiative called Save the Food wants vegetables and fruit, which are normally discarded or thrown away for strictly cosmetic reasons, there's nothing wrong with them, to actually end up in Czech supermarkets where they can be bought by consumers. A little earlier, I spoke to Adam Podhola of the Save the Food initiative.
With our campaign, Jsem připraven, which we could translate as I'm ready, we are focusing on the level of agriculture, and we are pointing out that almost 20% of fruits and vegetables are being rejected because of the strict cosmetic standards that are applied by the supermarkets. So there is actually, in the beginning of the food chain, we are rejecting such a huge amount of foods just because of the cosmetic standards. So basically, our campaign tries to raise awareness about this problem that in the beginning of the food chain, we're rejecting so much. And in a way that we would also like to, over the next couple of months, be looking for some solutions with the different actors of the food chain.
We're talking about fruit and vegetables which might sort of not fit the norm, which for whatever reason look different or look a little bit ugly or not what one is accustomed to. Is that correct?
Exactly. We're talking about smaller potatoes or bigger cauliflowers or wonky carrots, any produce that just doesn't look perfect but tastes the same.
I would have thought that at least a segment of the population would, for example, welcome the opportunity to buy some of this fruit or some of these vegetables, for example, even at a discount price, given that there are people who are pinching pennies or, in this case, pinching crowns.
Exactly. This is actually the point why we prepared this campaign, because last year we visited supermarkets and we were asking them about why don't you sell this this produce? Why do you have such a strict cosmetic standards on the fruits and vegetables? And they replied us that that the Czech customers are not ready. We don't really think that the Czech customers wouldn't be ready. I mean, they don't really have a choice to buy this produce so far in the supermarkets. We would like to get them on board and that they would also start to sell the produce and give the Czech customers actually a chance.
The fact that you are gathering signatures is one way of showing that there would be a high public interest in this case. And perhaps for supermarkets to maybe even begin pilot programs where they would run it.
Exactly. We would like to collect as many signatures as possible, then to show to the supermarkets that, look, there are, I don't know how many thousands of people. So far by today, it's almost 3,000 people who already signed for within one day. And so we like to collect as many signatures as possible to show them that, look, there are so many people who would like to buy it, but just give them a chance.
Okay, thank you there to Adam Podhola of the Save the Food Initiative and basically why crooked carrots should be ending up on the plate. And count me in as one of those in favor of ugly vegetables. Bring them on, I say. Now it's time for today's main feature. The London Czech Centre was instrumental in a recent project highlighting the industrial but also cultural heritage of the Ostrava region in the east of the country. Entitled Stories from Ostrava, From Industry to Culture, it inspired a short film called DOV by two students of architecture in London, as well as brought together a new exhibition of photographs by the famous photographer Viktor Kolář, who is Ostrava-born. Together, they were presented to form a unique glimpse for British audiences into another side of the Czech Republic, one beyond the medieval bridge and castle of the Czech capital. Earlier, I spoke to London Czech Centre's Renata Clark about stories.
The project was something which was very close to my heart and to my colleague. We knew of Ostrava's story and wanted to show that incredible change from the industrial city to a cultural hub. We felt that it's something which should resonate quite strongly with the UK, and because particularly Britain had to deal with redevelopment of industrial sites such as Liverpool or Sheffield in the past. So Ostrava was a similar story, but a different take. So that's why we approached the Architecture Association Gallery, the head of the gallery and one of the course leaders from the School of Architecture, and took them for a curatorial visit to Ostrava to show them what the redevelopment is about. Mm-hmm. So we spent 3 days there, talked to a lot of people, met with Marek Pokorný from Ostrava Plateau Gallery and Marta Pilařová from Hlubina, who sort of introduced us to many more people who were involved in the project from the beginning, and seeing that site with their own eyes and hearing all these stories surrounding it basically shaped the whole project. The creator decided, yes, they want to do it. They want to develop it together with the Czech Centre and send their student for a research trip next month.
Mm-hmm. For listeners who may not be familiar, what is the sort of industrial heritage of Ostrava? Is it all steel making, or are there other heavy industries there that we still see the remnants of?
The industrial heritage we were particularly focused on is concentrated in a specific site, which is called Dolní oblast Vítkovice. At the moment, it's a decommissioned site. I believe they stopped iron production in 1993. But what's unique about this place is that it was a combination of coal mining, coke production and steel production, which I believe is in a European or world context is something which doesn't take place anywhere else, that all three parts of that story of iron would be actually concentrated in one place.
The trip that took place afterwards with students, were they surprised by what they saw, and was this kind of the genesis of the idea to make this film essay?
Definitely. They came to Ostrava in July, which is the time when the colors of Ostrava take place as well. So they had on one side the incredible industrial buildings. On the other hand, they had this lively atmosphere, many concerts, a lot of young people enjoying that heritage through different means. They were totally overwhelmed and wanted to capture the spirit of the place, to capture the visual aspect of those blast furnaces. So they decided to use a medium of film. They were given a brief by the Architecture Association to showcase Ostrava at 2016 London Festival of Architecture, but they had total freedom what kind of means they choose or what the final product is going to be. So because of that visuality, they decided to use a film and to capture the community spirit, which is one of the theme of this year, a Festival of Architecture. They decided to interview the key player, whether representatives of the city, our cultural organization, historian, architect, and use those interviews as a platform to voice their views and opinions in the film itself.
Who actually are the filmmakers? And am I correct in assuming that there is a Czech connection there?
The film was made by two students from the AA School of Architecture, Timothy O'Hare and Veronika Janovcová. Veronika, who is of Slovak origin, was actually crucial to the project because obviously she understood the cultural context and was able to act as an interpreter when necessary.
How would you describe the film essay as a viewing experience? What kind of impression did it leave you with as a viewer?
I think that DOV, which is the title of the film, is really a journey. The filmmakers take you on a journey through Dolní Vítkovice. It's like you and the camera are on the bike and you ride through the site, having those ginormous blast furnaces looming above you. It's quite an impressive and dizzy ride, which is accompanied by those extracts from the interviews, which gives you a little bit of information. So it is a film essay, I think, what they did in the end. It's not a documentary. On one side, it's an artistic impression. On the other hand, it does provide a report on what is happening behind the screen.
I wanted to ask where this film or the exhibition in general fits in within the kind of discussion, this kind of balance between preservation and revitalization, where older factories or older buildings are transformed or they're gutted, but the main sort of architectural elements are untouched, if those questions also arose in the making of this film?
They certainly have. The views come through through those interviews, because all those people the filmmakers asked, they presented their own views, their own arguments, which were sometimes contradictory. The main question which was asked is, what is the role of revitalization of Dolní Vítkovice? Whether development will actually assist the development of the whole city, or whether it is actually something which might present a threat to that development. Those views can be heard throughout the film, but it is in the end left up to a viewer to make up her or his own mind.
The other accompanying aspect of this project was an exhibition of photographs that is presented. Is it one going back to the 60s and 70s? And what kind of city comes across?
The photographic exhibition is actually an integral part of the project. It moves beyond the story of Oblast Vítkovice and tells the story of Ostrava as a whole. It presents altogether 37 photographs by Ostrava-born Viktor Kolář, and for the first time this exhibition actually juxtaposes well-known black and white photographs from the 60s and 70s with the newly developed colored images of Ostrava as it is now. Therefore, you can see Ostrava throughout the time, from the 60s till now, with all the changes it's been through. It is a city of secret, unknown places where the time stood still, but it's also a city with new glossy architecture. The old decaying buildings are juxtaposed with glass fronts of new development. So it does present a very varied but continuous picture of one city.
And that was the Czech Center in London's Renata Clark talking to me about a recent project called Stories from Ostrava, basically celebrating or focusing on the industrial but also cultural heritage of that city and also the Dolní Vítkovice steelworks. If you want more information, be sure to visit the Czech Center's webpage to find out what's in store next for the film and so on. Also, you can find many more stories at our own website, radio.cz, in both sound and text. I'm afraid, though, that we are just about out of time for this day. I'll say thanks for joining us and tune in again soon.